Ba-doom, 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 but this is the Paranormal Tea. Ba-doom, 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 with Ryan and Bethany. Ba-doom, ba-doom.
I don't like it.
Why
have you changed it?
I just thought it was something a bit different.
Nope. Don't like it.
Okay.
I still think that we need to actually make a proper song rather than just this random rubbish singing at the start.
Well, you make me do it every single time, so...
Because people love it.
No one loves it.
11th episode of The Paranormal Tea.
Woohoo! With myself, Ryan, and this lady here called Beth.
And we're in a beautiful relationship, which is mutually respectful. And we never talk over the top of each other. We never argue. It's just like pure harmony.
That's such a lie. I wish that were true.
Oh, bless. So on today's episode, we have two stories.
Two? Slacking. Where's the rest?
They're long. That's why they're long.
They better be long.
They are long. We have two stories from Lancaster.
Lancaster.
Or Lancashire. However you pronounce it.
I feel like you're the worst person to be given, like, a geography lesson.
Sure, but you can't talk. Do you even know where Lancashire is, Ryan?
In England, dickhead.
Which part of England?
North. Oh, west?
Devonshire.
Aha!
Well, it's not really north. Like, as a northerner, I wouldn't class it as north, because it's it's like a minute out of Manchester, so no. It's
what
not
is it
north.
With northern people? It's always like a competition of who is further north.
It's in our blood. We're like descendants of Vikings, probably. So, yeah.
Everyone could be descendants of Vikings.
Sure. It's not like you, where you've got your little Genghis Khan, your little birthmark, which basically means that your ancestors were like raped by someone. Savage birthmark.
Well. There's no evidence to support that, so that may or may not be true.
It's all over the internet.
It's not all over the internet.
The Mongolian blue smoke is on the internet. But anyways...
If it's on Google, it's true.
Yes. Yeah. Like all of our stories, Ryan. God!
Of course.
So, I hope that you've all been enjoying our podcast so far. And welcome if you're a new listener, if you're a recurring listener, then we absolutely adore you because we don't have many, so... We really appreciate every listen.
You sound so desperate.
I am desperate at this point.
You're so unbelievably desperate.
We're going to move into our very first story.
Okay.
So, well, actually, no, we'll tell people what the two stories are so they have something to look forward to. Our two stories today are about a talking cat.
Oh, my God.
And witch trials.
They're both kind of related, cats and witches.
Oh, yeah, I didn't think about that. Ooh!
Maybe the witch has cast a spell on her cat and lets the cat talk.
Well, let's ponder that after we listen to the story, right? Okay. So our first story is our talking cat story. Are you ready?
Aye, aye.
One evening, an old gentleman who lived in the middle of Lancashire sat reading in his parlour. Outside, the wind was beginning to growl like a dog that smells strangers, and every now and again the rain was dashed against the windows like a handful of gravel. But the curtains were drawn. The wet, inclement night was shut out, and inside was all cosy. Spectacles on his nose, the old man sat back in his winged chair and rested his slippered feet on a little footstool. He was reading, and the room round him was quiet. A big grandfather clock ticked away in the parlour, swinging its pendulum backwards and forwards with great solemnity. The paper of his book rustled as the man turned over the pages, and from time to time the ashes in the grate fell with a soft crash and sent a few sparks up the chimney. The room was warm and still, and the flames of the candles burned brightly and steadily. Suddenly, upon the wide hearth there began to fall a little drops, and as they pattered down, the old gentleman put down his book and adjusted his spectacles. "Ugh," he said to himself, "that's the worst of these old-fashioned chimneys. They let the smoke out, but they let the rain in too. It must be beginning to splash down outside." Therefore, he put up his spectacles again and returned back to his book. But before he had read two sentences, there was a fresh fall and the fire began to hiss. "Ugh," he said. "We must have a startling in the chimney after all. Drat, those birds. The house is never quiet when they're about." Back at his book, he turned again, but this time, before he could even find his place, there was a fresh fall of soot. The fire dimmed strangely and went down. The candle flames began to flicker and to shake, and then from out of the mouth of the chimney there sprang a great grey cat. A wild, outlandish cat, with fur matted with the rain, a long lean body, one green eye and one brown one, and a quick, eager look on his face. Resting his paws on the footstool, he looked up, searched into the old man's face, opened his mouth, and then, in perfectly clear and intelligible voice, said, "Tell Dildrum that Doldrum's dead," and then leapt back into the chimney. He kicked down more soot and vanished. The old man could scarce believe his eyes. Surely that cat had been real. There could be little doubt of that, for there on the footstool were the marks of two sooty paws. But had the cat really spoken, and had he really uttered those strange words about Dildrum and Doldrum? The old man blinked with confusion and wondered if he could trust his senses. Just then the door opened. In came the old man's wife, and after her, Julius, their own cat. Julius was no ragamuffin of a cat. He was handsome from top to toe, and his fur was a lovely Quaker. "Here's your tea, Matthew," said the old woman. "I've brought you a dish of your favourite China tea. Oh, and two little..." "Why, Matthew, I declare that you aren't listening to a word that I'm saying." "Oh, I beg your pardon, my dear. I wasn't listening, I must confess." "Why, what's happened to you? You look as if you've had a shock." "Not a shock, my dear, but something has happened tonight that has made me wonder if I can trust my senses any more." "Then first take your tea," said his wife, "and tell me all about what it is as quietly as you can." "Well, my dear," began the old gentleman, "I don't know that I can expect you to believe me, but this, I must take my oath on it, this is what happened tonight in this very room. I was sitting here in this seat with my legs crossed on this footstool, reading my favourite old book, Robin Crusoe. I remember I had just got to the point where..." "Yes, dear, you can omit that detail. Go on." "Well, just as I was reading, down that chimney, believe it or not, came a cat. A great grey creature with one green eye and one brown eye, and a body as lean as a rake." The old man paused in his narrative, for as he came to the description of the grey cat, Julius pricked up his ears and got up and turned so that he was facing the old man. Then he fixed upon his master's face, so intent and human, a look that the old gentleman could not go on with his tale. "Just look at Julius. What's the matter, old pussy? Do you want to hear her? Well, I'll tell you." So, half forgetting his wife, the old man began to talk to the cat. "Yes, down the chimney came this great grey messenger. He leapt out onto the hearth, put his 2 feet upon my footstool, opened his mouth and said..."
"Said, Matthew," interrupted the old woman. "Do you mean to say that this cat spoke?"
"Yes, he spoke as clearly as you or I. Tell Dildrum," he said. At this, Julius opened his wide blue eyes and he looked more intently than ever. "Tell Dildrum that Doldrum is dead." "Well, I never heard anything so funny in all my life. Dildrum and Doldrum, Tweedledum and Tweedledee. Tell Dildrum," he said. "Why, what's the matter, Julius?" Julius had leapt up with all 4 feet now on the footstool. In his eyes there was a strange look, half of sorrow, half of excitement and triumph. Then suddenly, he too opened his mouth, and in a rich and princely voice, he said, "At last! Is Doldrum dead? Why, that makes me the king of the cats!" Thereupon, the flames of the candles began to flicker again. The fire sank and dimmed. Julius, or Dildrum, leapt onto the hearth and vanished up the chimney. When they had recovered from their shock, the two old people ran out and looked up, but there was nothing to be seen. The great sagging clouds were passing over the sky, the fringes of the trees were scratching at the roof of the house, but no Julius was to be seen. He had gone to his kingdom and was already sitting in state with a golden crown on his princely head.
What the actual hell was that story? That wasn't scary.
No, Right, okay. The whole thing of this podcast is we're also doing folklore. And when I read it, I was like, oh my God, this has to go in the podcast. So it's so funny.
It's honestly, it sounds like, even like, you know when people make up stupid stories and there's like a moral to the story? What's the moral to that story?
Don't judge a cat by its fur. I don't know.
Jesus. And why is the cat not called Julius in Catworld? Why does it have to be called Dildo or whatever they called it? Fucking Dildo and Frodo.
Oh God, don't. I was dying.
And you said pussy. that was the only thing I think that kept me awake during that. Yeah, that is by far the worst of your stories. I hate to be brutally honest here, but that was awful.
That was hilarious. What are you on about? Right, so in Lancaster, it's one of the folk tales that they tell their kids about Dildrum and Doldrum and this talking cat.
But what's the moral of the story?
There is no moral. Why does there have to be a moral?
Every nursery rhyme's got a moral of the story.
It's not a nursery rhyme. It's not got a moral.
You know what I mean? Like, Humpty Dumpty's on a wall. Don't sit on walls, kids.
That is not the moral of the story.
Of course it is. What else is the moral of Humpty Dumpty?
God. I don't know.
Don't be a loiterer. Just sit around in public, you know, being a nuisance to the town, otherwise you'll fall off and no one can put you back together again.
No, I don't think that's the moral.
Slight tangent.
Did you not think it was kind of funny?
I thought it was a weird story. I'm like, well, right, okay, for starters, so cats can talk. Okay, yeah. Right? So this is what we have to establish. Cats can talk, and they have this secret society that they don't tell humans about. Some grey cat that has never met this person before decides to break all laws in cat world and tell this person that Dildo's dead. So I don't understand what was going through this cat's head to make it think it had the authority to break sacred cat law.
Well, obviously, it was coming to tell the future king that he was the king. Because then Julius / Dildrum went off into little cat land and ruled over all.
To be cat king?
Yeah, but king of cats.
But he's not Tiger King.
That was bad. Carol Baskin would be ashamed.
Carol Baskin!
So, yeah, that is the strange little story.
I'm going to put my neck on the line for this one. I'm going to say, sorry, Lancaster, I don't think that story's true.
But I think it's true.
You think it's true?
Yeah, because, like, my cat definitely can talk. She sat with us now. And if she could talk, she'd tell you to piss off.
She looks like she's going to hurt someone.
She is going to hurt you.
Pure evil. Pure evil.
She is kind of evil. I'm waiting for her to, like, hiss or something.
Yeah.
No, nope, she's just intently staring at the podcast.
Because she knows, because she can hear us, and she speaks cat language. So she... Ah, look, her ears just perked up when I said cat language.
Did they actually?
Yeah, cat language.
Dildrum, Dildrum. Doldrum, Dildrum, Doldrum, Dildrum,
Dildo killed Doldrum. And now there's a cat king.
Oh, now she wants out.
No, she's not interested.
Let the cat out.
Okay.
Run, Ella, and tell Dildrum that Doldrum is dead.
Oh my God, what if we've just misinformed the cat and now she's going to run off and tell all her cat friends?
Tell them what?
That Dildrum's dead.
Doldrum's dead.
Yeah, she's going to... And then, this is where, like, time loop, she's going to tell that grey matted cat and then he's going to go...
He's going to tell them.
Yeah, jumping down that chimney. Why don't cats just walk through the front door? Why do they've got to come in and out of the house through a chimney?
Well, the door wasn't open.
And also, why does his wife just go for a walk with the cat following behind as well?
I don't know, it was a bit weird. I thought that was a bit weird. Well,
it's like, you don't walk the cat like you... If she, it was like the dog trailed in behind, I'd be like, yes.
Yeah.
You know.
I don't know, it was very strange. But hopefully our next story will be a little bit more entertaining. It's kind of like, our next story is like kind of like a history lesson.
Okay.
It kind of talks you through these different witch trials. So I thought at the end of it, at the end of all of these, like, talking about witch trials, we can kind of talk about what we think witches are and, like, talk about witches in general.
Okay.
Yeah?
I don't think we've explored witches yet,
have
we?
That's what I thought. So I was like, when I saw this witch trial, I was like, what a perfect opportunity.
Brilliant. Are they gruesome stories?
No.
Oh. Okay. Well, so here we go. I'm so not excited now.
Here we go. Stories of the witch trials. On August the 20th, 1612, 10 people were convicted of witchcraft at the Lancaster Castle. They went to the gallows on the moors above the town. Among them were two men and a woman in her 80s. Their crimes included laming,
causing madness and what was termed simple witchcraft. In addition to this, some 16 unexplained deaths, many stretching back decades, were laid at their door. Lancashire, in the early years of the 17th century, was remote, its roads were poor, and its people were ill-educated. Throughout the county, there were places where the outside world hardly intruded, and one such area was Pendle Forest. It was there, among stark hillsides in fertile valleys and scattered hamlets, that the story of the Pendle witches had its beginnings. An ill-fated meeting. On March 18th, 1612, a young woman by the name of Alison Device was out begging on the road of Colne. She stopped a peddler from Halifax, John Law, and asked him for a pin. He refused her request and walked away. According to Alison's own testimony, her familiar spirit in the shape of a dog appeared to her and asked her if she would like him to harm Law. Alison was new to the art of witchcraft. Indeed, she seemed to have resisted being indoctrinated into what was in effect the family business. But now she agreed that Law must be punished, and she told her dog to lame the peddler. No doubt, to her great surprise, the curse took effect immediately, and Law fell to the ground, paralysed down one side, presumably by a stroke, and unable to speak. He was taken to a local inn, and later Alison was brought to his bedside. She admitted her part in his illness and begged his forgiveness, which he gave. However, Law's son Abraham had become involved, and he was far from satisfied. He took the matter to Roger Noel, the local magistrate, and from there things snowballed at an alarming rate. After hearing the most awful admissions from those he interviewed, Noel made many arrests. By the end of April, 19 people were incarcerated in Lancaster Castle, awaited trial. The Pendle accused and their crimes. The most famous of the Pendle witches actually died before coming to trial. Elizabeth Southerns had admitted to Noel that she was a witch. In so doing, she also implicated many of her co-accused, as did Anne Whittle, who was herself accused of the murder by witchcraft of Robert Nutter. Also implicated were members of both of their families. Elizabeth Device was accused of two murders, as was her son James. While Alison was to stand trial for what she had done to John Law on that fateful spring day 5 months before, as well as her, Anne Redfern, Whittle's daughter, stood accused of the murder of Christopher Nutter 18 years previously. Others were dragged into the affair. John and Jane Bullock, a mother and her son, were tried of causing madness and for being at a so-called Witch's Sabbath held at Malkin Tower on Good Friday, 1612. Alice Nutter, from Rowley Hall, was accused of killing one Henry Mitten because he refused to give her a penny. Margaret Pearson was accused of bewitching one of her neighbour's horses to death, and Catherine Hewitt was accused of the murder of Anne Foulds. Trial Day 1. The trials commenced on the Tuesday, 18th of August, with Sir Edward Bromley presiding. First into the docks was Anne Whittle. She was accused of the murder of Robert Nutter some 18 years previously. She pleaded not guilty, but eventually confessed when confronted with evidence given by Elizabeth Southerns. Elizabeth Device then followed her into court. She stood charged with 3 counts of murder, accusations that she denied. However, the prosecution had a star witness in the form of Elizabeth's own 9-year-old daughter, Janet. Her evidence was devastating, and Elizabeth was so overcome with anger that she had to be removed from court. Janet told of familiar spirits, of the making of clay images in order to cause death, of the Sabbaths supposedly held at Malkin Tower on Good Friday, where it was decided to blow up the castle and kill the governor in order to free those imprisoned there. She spoke of witches mounting ponies flying off before vanishing into thin air. Inevitably, Elizabeth was found guilty as well. James Device was tried next. He was in a pitiable condition and may even have been physically ill-treated during his imprisonment. However, there was little sympathy for him, and after more hearsay evidence and his own testimony, he was found guilty along with Elizabeth Device and Anne Whittle. Trial Day 2. Anne Redfern was tried for killing Christopher Nutter 18 years previously. The evidence hinged on Nutter's daughter remembering that her father believed he was a victim of a curse. she had also been seen making clay images of James' device. Anne was found guilty. Next into the dock was Alice Nutter. She was a gentle woman and the evidence against her was flimsy. However, her fate was sealed by Janet Device, who identified her as being present at the infamous Sabbath. Alice too was convicted. The trial of Catherine Hewer went much the same way, with little Janet again the star witness. Catherine was convicted as well. Janet's evidence against John and Jane Bullock was even more slight. She remembered John turning a spit on which she had roasted a lamb that Good Friday. It was illegal to aid or assist a witch, and this was enough in 1612, along with other hearsay evidence, to seal the fate of both defendants. Margaret Pearson was tried for killing a horse by riding it to death. She was convicted, although ultimately not condemned. Alison Device was the last of the Pendle witches to be tried. Unusually, the key witness against her was also the victim, John Law. He was the object of much pity, and as his brush with Alison had left him crippled. When he was assisted into court, Alison rushed to him and begged his forgiveness once more, which he again gave. The court was moved to ask her if she could help restore him to health. She told them that she was not powerful enough, but Elizabeth Southerns, if she had lived, could have done so. Alison was found guilty. On August 20th, 1612, the 10 condemned prisoners were taken to the moors above the town and hanged.
Well, interesting.
Do you feel like you learned a little bit of history there?
I did enjoy a bit of history. Although, I always think medieval trials are a little bit unfair when they say, then they confessed. Because they used to do horrible things to people to make them confess, and then said to everyone that they confessed.
Yeah, so that guy who was like came out like beaten to crap.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, it's presumed that he probably was ill-treated. It's like, well, definitely he's the only bloke in a witch trial. Like, definitely.
I think back then they were quite harsh towards witches too, so I think even witches were tortured during like interrogations and things like that.
But it said that one of them, well, no, two of them were convicted just for being there.
Well, yeah, aiding, what is it, you can get done for that nowadays, can't you, if you're assisting with a crime or if you're, like, present when something bad's happening.
All they were doing was having a Sabbath, though. Just having a little party.
Just a little Sabbath, you know, yeah. As you do every Saturday.
Your mum does Sabbath, I swear.
Well, I've never seen her have a Sabbath, so it may happen. It may not. I don't know.
But I thought it was, like, pure savage that one of their daughters basically, like, spragged on every single one of them.
Oh my god.
Said, they were there, they were there, they were there, they were there. Kill them all. Including our own mum. A 9-year-old daughter, like, sent her mum to death by spragging on her.
She must have not have, like, I don't know.
It was like,
she mustn't have let her in the cinema or something like that to go watch the new... Well, I don't know what people did back then for entertainment.
1600s.
Well, I don't know. What would people have to have against the mother back in 1600s? It's not like a...
Look at Mum, you never buy my favourite brand of Cocoa Pops. But it was a bit weird, right? So there was a mother and a daughter, both of them called Elizabeth, right? The mother, she told on all of them. She told on the like one side of the family.
Bitch.
Right? And then her granddaughter told on her daughter. So the grandmother and the granddaughter spragged on everyone.
Oh my god.
And then the grandmother got killed, but the granddaughter was...
Do you know what this has made me think of? That I think would be an amazing TV series. Medieval EastEnders.
It is a bit like that, isn't it?
With all
of
them.
You're not my mother!
Like, the big reveal at the end of the story is that she didn't give birth to her. She, like, created her in a potion.
She drank
a potion and became pregnant. Like, that's the end of it. That's like the medieval equivalent of a test tube baby.
So, we're going to just generally discuss witches. Because I think when you actually look at some of the stuff that they got tried for.
Yeah.
And what people got accused of it being witchcraft and that. Then normally, when you look at them, it's like stuff that people do nowadays.
What, just like normal stuff? Or like taking selfies in the toilet stuff? Or like...
No, I mean, like, so one of them... She basically, like, she was begging and said, can I have a penny? And he goes, nah, mate. Walks off. And then apparently she's saying that her familiar like a familiar spirit attacked him, but what they're saying is that he like collapsed probably from a stroke. So he basically said, no, you're not having a penny, had a stroke, and then accused her of being a witch.
No, she handed herself in.
No, she went and apologised to him, and then his son handed her in.
Yeah, but no, she apologised to him by saying, yeah, I'm sorry, I cast a spell on you, mate, and that's why you're paralysed.
I don't think that's what happened, though, because back then it was like women like got tried for everything as witchcraft.
Mm.
One of them rode a horse to death. I'm kind of like a little bit worried as like, to what they mean by that.
That's just weird. You know, it's in like you can ride a horse to death, but
with witchcraft.
I don't think it was done with witchcraft. I think she was probably just a bit of a dick and didn't let the horse
slapped it too many times or something.
No, you don't slap a horse to death, but you can ride it to death. Like if you ran non-stop, you'd eventually die, wouldn't you?
What, horses just run until they die?
Yeah.
Why?
I don't know. But honestly, have you not watched Gladiator?
No. Nope.
Because when he's racing back home, he rides his horse to death. I'm pretty sure that it happens in
wrong. The only True reason, Grit. Though, I think it sounds dodge is because I know, like I've heard, well, I know slash heard, that when people used to say that witches rode on broomsticks, it was actually that they... No, I'm not even... I'm telling you the truth here. That they used to put, like, sort of like psychedelic drugs on the end of their broomsticks and put them up their vaginas. And, like, you absorb things into your bloodstream quick from there. So they basically got high and rode their broomsticks.
That's disgusting.
That is genuinely true. You can actually look in history books that that's actually what they happened.
Why the hell would you... Why is that not in, like, the Halloween cartoon?
Because you can't tell children that, can you?
Well, no.
When the little kids... Like, you think about that the next time it's Halloween, you see all these little girls dressed up as witches.
I don't think about that because I'm not weird.
It's messed up.
Jesus.
We should be telling all of our children you're not allowed to pretend you're riding a broomstick.
Could you imagine that? Like,
it's wrong.
Can I be a witch for Halloween? No! No!
You can be a witch without a broomstick.
I'd much rather you would be a wizard.
Yeah.
Or you could be a female wizard.
So, like, what do you think witches actually are then?
Well, I think that witches and wizards go to a school called Hogwarts. And there they learn all the magical spells.
Right.
And
but for real, though?
For real. Like, what? I don't know. I reckon back in the day, when people were being accused of witchcraft and stuff, they were probably just using, like, herbal remedies and things like that, because back then everyone was just like, oh, well, you just pray the pain away.
Like witch doctors.
Yeah, you know, and obviously it doesn't always work, but if some old creepy lady is sat there giving you, like, plants and stuff, and then you eat the plants and you start to feel better, I can imagine them going, witch, she's a witch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as opposed to, oh, if you just pray to God, God will save you.
Because there's a lot of, like, herbal remedies that they've proven that they used to use back in the medieval days. They didn't know that it was, like, antibacterial and stuff like that.
Yeah, you wouldn't know why it was working, but it does work.
Because they believed in stuff like that headaches were, like, evil thoughts in your heads and stuff like that, didn't they?
It's called trepanning, where they used to drill holes into each other's heads to release the evil spirits.
I thought that was, like, cavemen that did that. No. Well,
apparently it went all the way up to medieval days. The most interesting thing about that is, though, there's actually evidence of people's, like, skulls healing after.
Oh, I know, yeah.
To mean that it's like they've actually hammered a hole into someone's skull and then the skull's healed over, so this person has somehow survived that.
Oof.
That's kind of weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because you can just imagine, oh, I'm going to release the evil spirits from his head. Oh, he died. Oh, well. If I had a headache, I'd keep it to myself.
They used to say that if they died because of it, then it was because they had too many evil thoughts.
Ah, it's not because someone just drilled a hole into
their
head. Or,
like, that God rescued them. Like, they had too many evil thoughts, so God just rescued them and took them up to heaven.
That is the worst doctor's excuse I think I've ever heard. I'm really sorry. We've lost him. God saved him. You know what I mean? Like, not, I mean, I could have told him just to get over the headache, but instead I thought...
Maybe it was the hole in the head. But yeah, so I know that, like, I'm in a lot of witchy communities and that.
Right. There is, you mean you follow a lot on Facebook?
I follow a lot on Facebook. And I know that your mom is into witchy stuff as well. Yeah. So I think there is sort of an element of that, like witches, witchcraft, Wiccan, like paganism. That's kind of like a different thing to what people think witches are.
Right.
Like these are people who kind of follow like a, it's a bit like a religion. Like they believe in, like the rule of three, or like where it's about how, like, it's a bit like karma. Like rule of three is like where whatever you do spell wise is going to come back onto you threefold. So if you like try and hurt someone, it's going to come back to you threefold. But some people don't believe in that, and some people believe in all like deities and like pray to different like gods, goddesses, or demons, or powers, or something. And it is a bit like a religion nowadays,
right?
That people believe.
So that whole threefold thing, like, if I was really, really nice, I'd get, like, triple nicety back.
Yeah. That's what the threefold thing is.
You're so lovely, you know that.
Don't try and be nice now to me.
Where's my threefold?
Sure.
Well, we've just debunked a religion.
Sure.
Look at that.
So, witches, I mean, I don't think that they were actually doing what they said that they were doing back in the medieval days. I don't think that they were going around casting spells on people, because you'd know a lot more about it if that was actually happening.
Yeah, but then,
and
back
then, why would people kill them?
But back then, everyone believed everything. So this lady, like, in her head, she's like, oh, I cursed him.
She probably didn't believe it herself, didn't she?
You know, so she curses him, and then something bad happens to him, and she believes that she caused the curse. And if, you know, I just think that, I don't know, were people more gullible back then?
Yeah.
Probably.
They literally said that they were ill-educated, didn't it?
Yeah, true. Yeah.
All of them just believed whatever the church told them.
Exactly.
So, there we go, kids. Religion is a messy area.
But witches nowadays are a lot nicer than they used to be. Well, in fact, were they ever bad?
I don't think they were ever bad.
You don't think they were? You just think they were like old, wise women in the forest?
But I mean, the witch life, I mean, I tried to do it, but it requires a lot of you. And you have to be, like, too nice, I think.
You gotta be
people
too
think,
nice.
Yeah, people think that witches are really bad. Most of them are really, like, nice, and there's, like, proper community feel to it. And, like, you can't just... There is such a thing as solitary witches, but there's not really. And they're all, like, in the forest, like, stroking animals and collecting herbs and being all, a bit like Snow White. And do, like, prayers and... It's just a lot.
God, you know what we need? We need some badass witches who ride broomsticks the original way.
Ew.
No, I mean like as in they actually fly in the sky. I don't mean what you're on about.
Ew.
And we need some, none of this like pussy white witch crap.
I think that
sat in the forest stroking animals.
If you want
God.
That, right, you've just said riding, pussy, stroking.
What?
Too Was many it? Bad words in one sentence.
I don't remember saying pussy.
Yeah, you did.
Did I?
Yeah.
When? Quote me.
Said, old pussy white witches.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. That,
oh,
were
God. I think this podcast needs to end right here, right now.
You could edit that into a string just to make it sound like I've said I want witches riding broomsticks with their pussies.
Oh, do it, man.
Please do it. No, don't do it. Don't do it. You make me look
do
very
it. Don't
bad.
Don't do it. Don't do it.
Good angel, bad angel.
So, I hope that you've all enjoyed today's podcast.
We're going to round it up.
We're going to... With what?
I don't know, I'm saying...
Oh my God, I've just realised both stories had pussy in it.
Yeah, you did, yeah. You said... Did you say pussy in the story, or did I just say it?
No, you just said it.
Word of the day, folks. Pussy.
Do you want to summarise then? Go on.
Well, no, I was saying, are we going to summarise? Right, so yeah. So, thank you very, very, very much for listening. Beth's going to tell you all about social media and stuff and where to find us. And yeah, now's your turn. That's your cue. Talk about Instagram and Facebook.
So
and...
if you want more paranormal tea content, you want to see us regular, engage with us. Please engage with us. Comment, leave likes, sort of thing, on our Facebook or our Instagram at The Paranormal Tea. And if you are listening to this podcast, then please, 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 please share it with all your pals so that we
so
can...
So desperate.
Yeah, I am desperate. So that we can grow The Paranormal Tea and spread it to more listeners.
It's like cringy level desperate. Cringe. This has been The Paranormal Tea with Ryan.
Bethany!
Ba-dum-bum.